Lori Hartley, she's the Associate Director of Admissions and International Students here at the Office of Admissions. She works with international students at the Office of Admissions at Howard Community College. And that's why I said that it brings hope. Because for me, when I was a student, when I first came to this country and I was dealing with, my personal immigration statuses and things like that, that was one of the things, that was one of the first people that I met at the college. I went to Baltimore City Community College at the time. And that was one of the first people that I met, and I was so glad to meet the woman who worked at the office. Her name is escaping me right now. But she is the person who showed me light at the end of the tunnel. She really was. You know, she said, if you come and study with us, if you enroll, these are the options for you to enroll. These are the things that you can do. These are the things that you don't want to do if you don't want to get into trouble. I mean, it was just, and in that moment, it was like having an angel, a personal angel guiding me and saying, this is the path you need to follow, right? And then we all want to have that angel in our life sometimes. So if you are an international student, if you are a student here in the United States, who falls into that kind of, into the DREAM Act, undocumented, just, you know, any of the categories, Lori is the person that you want to get in touch with. She is, you know, her office is the office that you want to be in touch with. They're the ones who can help you. So we're going to talk about all of that this morning. But before we do that, I always like to get to know my guests a little bit better. And because I think that if you are where you are today, that says a lot about who you are already. And there's a reason why you're there. So Lori, I want to welcome you. And I'd love to start there by just learning about you and, you know, what inspires you at your job? What is it that you enjoy the most, or why is it that you're doing the job that you're doing?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here this morning. My interest in international education started many, many years ago. How you sort of come upon things just through your journey. I grew up in a very, very small rural farming town in upstate New York, and no one in my family had ever gone to college, so I'm a first-generation college student. And even from a young age, I had that sense that going to college was going to be my way out of that very small town. So then when I got to college, I just loved all of the student activities and all the things that the college had to offer. And I found myself always drawn to, you know, languages. I studied Japanese and I was a Spanish major, and I was lucky enough to be able to study in Spain. And I loved all the cultural activities that took place on a college campus, and sort of had an idea that, oh, I might want to like continue working in the college setting. Then I went to grad school and I had an assistantship in academic advising, which I loved. And I was studying a lot of student development theory, and I was able to see how those theories were reflected right in the students that were in front of me. And one summer on this assistantship, I was asked to help with international student orientation run by a different office on campus. And I loved that experience. I thought it was so much fun. And that's when I thought, oh, I might like to work with international students. And I feel really lucky. I've been at HCC for over 20 years. And most of that time has been as a part-time international student advisor. And about 4 years ago, I moved into the associate director position. There's many things that I love about my job. One of them is that Howard County is quite diverse, and that is reflected in our student population. We have over 100 different countries represented each semester, which I just think is amazing. And I feel very lucky that I get to work with a lot of those students every day. But the thing that I love the most is I get to work with a student from the maybe even the first time that they inquire about an interest in Howard Community College. And then I can help them through the admissions process. I can do academic advising. I can help them with transfer. And for a lot of our students who might be immigrant students, and they might be taking classes on a part-time basis, that means they're here for 3 or 4 years, and that's okay. Like for me, that makes it even better because I get to work with them for even longer. And that's a great way to establish relationships with students. And I think that leads to a little bit better advising because then you're talking to the student as a whole person. You're learning what else is going on in their lives. What are they trying to balance while they're trying to be a student?
What a beautiful approach. Trying to really understand and see the student as a whole person. I absolutely love that you just said that because I think we center in that one idea of the student, right? And we have our perception of what a student is, right? And generally speaking, we don't think of non-traditional students as students. We know we're there. I was one of them. But generally speaking, when we think of students, we think of somebody who is right fresh out of high school, has no other obligations, and it's just dedicated to studying. And for a lot of international students, many times that's not necessarily the case. What has been most surprising to you, finding, you know, maybe in differences or maybe similarities from international students and students who are here born in the U.S., from all students, right? That maybe it might surprise some of our listeners or some of our viewers maybe to hear that there is this, that's what I'm saying, either difference or similarities, maybe something that really has spoken to you that you've seen and maybe we're not expecting to find for your job.
Right. Well, some of the similarities are, I think when you look at the community college population, you do have a lot of students that are working their way through school or who are juggling other family responsibilities. I mean, it might be that they have to get take care of a younger sibling sometimes. You know, we see a lot of that across the board. I think the thing that sort of surprised me as I started working more with immigrant students or students that didn't have status was sort of how there's another layer of stress on top of them. You know, there's worry about their not just their status, but perhaps the status of other people in their family or in their household, people that they're living with that they might be worried about. And it was sort of brought to light to me, you know, some students without status, we call them, maybe they're living in families with mixed status households. So they may have siblings that are US citizens. They may have parents that are in a protected status. It just adds like a whole nother layer of things for these young people to consider as they're just trying to work their way through school.
It's a reality that, I know is uncomfortable for a lot of people. And maybe you're listening to this conversation and you're having some reactions and something's triggering. I just want to acknowledge that. And I just want to say that wherever you fall in the talks of the immigration issues, I invite you to just remember that at the end of it, when you're talking immigration, you're talking people. And so, Lori, thank you for bringing that, that back to the front of the conversation, because we can get lost in the politics of it. We can get lost in the semantics of it. And we really forget that at the end of the day, these are the lives of people who are here in our country. So help us understand better what your office, the Office of International Admissions at HCC does. What's your job there?
Yes, sure. Well, sometimes when I introduce myself, my title is Associate Director of International Admissions, but I always add on international and immigrant, and then I add on admissions and advising, because we do a lot, and I am trying to incorporate the word immigrant a little bit more, because I think a lot of students who have been in the US for a long time, they don't consider themselves to be international. So we're trying to make our mission a little bit more known, that we serve not just international students, but also the immigrant students who are here. And it isn't just admissions. We do not just academic advising, but me and my team, I have an enrollment manager and two part-time international student advisors who work a lot with our DACA students, undocumented students. We're here to serve as a resource to students too. So we might not know the answer to everything, but we probably can point a student in the right direction. And we have a lot of connections to services off campus too. You know, a lot of places that we can refer students for help if it's beyond the scope of what we're able to do in our office. So yes, admissions and advising, international and immigrant.
Thanks for making that clarification, because I honestly, I can't say that I had thought about it. And I love that you're doing that, because I guess I started as an international student, but I really would have been an immigrant student, right? I mean, I became that. So thanks for pointing that out. I think it's important to open that door and to help those students who are in this country and don't feel of themselves as international, you know, to know that there is a place.
Right.
So help us make that distinction. You mentioned DACA, you mentioned Dream Act. So help us understand the difference. Help us understand how that relationship works, what one is and what the other does.
Sure. So we have to put on our history hats and go back to 2012. If we go back to the President Obama administration, at that time, there was a large push for immigration reform, and there was a hope that there would be some sort of legislative solution especially for youth that were here in the U.S. in an undocumented status. And that group of individuals became known as Dreamers. So we heard a lot about Dreamers, and the legislation was meant to be for Dreamers. Well, unfortunately, the legislation never happened. And so because of that, President Obama instituted, through an executive order, something that was called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And we use the letters to call that DACA, which we call DACA or DACA, or sometimes we call it Deferred Action for short. And the deferred action is actually that we the U.S., is not going to deport these students are protected from deportation. These individuals are protected from deportation. And the DACA criteria at the time was very specific. It still is very specific. These individuals had to have come into the U.S. before they were 16. They had to be in the U.S. on a particular date in 2007, and they had to have been in the U.S. continuously. They had to be in school, and they couldn't have any sort of criminal record. So DACA provided these individuals with work authorization and protection from deportation. Well, that's wonderful. There's also, I mean, there's a little bit of an arbitrary feel to it, though, because, you know, with any kind of legislation or executive order, there has to be a starting date. So this date in 2007 was picked, and it was, we know there are students in the U.S., individuals in the U.S. who maybe came into the U.S. a month after that date. And so they're not going to qualify for deferred action. So around the same time in 2012, the state of Maryland, through legislation and through a referendum vote, put into being a Maryland Dream Act, which is meant to provide some individuals with a tuition benefit if they've graduated from a Maryland high school and if they've been paying Maryland taxes, you know, throughout their high school, or for now, there's sort of been an amendment for the last 3 years, we can take Maryland taxes. And it allows that student to qualify as a resident here at HCC. And more recently, in an amendment that came out a year ago, February, they actually can start their education at a four-year school and receive that same benefit. So a lot of people will use the word dreamer to mean a lot of different things, because we have the Maryland Dream Act, which has dream in the title. And a lot of people think of DACA students as dreamers, but, you know, technically they are two different things, and a student could qualify for both. They could be deferred action and they could also qualify for the Maryland Dream Act.
Thank you for clarifying that, because we think DACA, we think dreamers, and we put them all into one thing. And it's important for those who are looking for these benefits, it's important for those who need these benefits to know that, one, they're available, right? And two, which ones they can qualify for, and if they can actually belong to both. If somebody does qualify for both groups, do they apply for both? Through both helps, and where's the HCC's line? Up to where do you guys assist? You know, somebody who comes into your office and falls into either one of these groups. You said earlier, you know, you look at the whole person, and it's not just that academic advisory, but it's also kind of like guidance. I'd love to hear a little more about that, so that somebody who may be in one of these groups has, you know, maybe a little weight lifted off their shoulders and has the confidence to call to your office, because they know that they can get that assistance.
Yes. Well, there is nothing wrong with belonging to both categories. And we probably would suggest that if a student can qualify for both, that they go ahead and qualify for both. I think some of, what we see is that DACA is in the news a lot, and especially under the Trump administration, it was in the news a lot. I mean, he very quickly rescinded DACA right after he came into office in 2017. And the Maryland Dream Act, it doesn't get a lot of press. I mean, a lot of people don't know about it. And I've done a lot of outreach out in the county high schools and through the guidance counselors to educate them that the Maryland Dream Act does exist, and please send students to us. My team does try to help students when they apply to Howard Community College. We're asking them, has anyone ever talked to you about the Maryland Dream Act? And I mean, a lot of times the answer is no. They don't know what it is. They haven't heard of it. So we're trying to individually spread the word as students are applying to HCC.
So it is important, and it for those who might fall into these categories, who might be in this country. So Lori, let's revisit the guidelines, I guess, for dreamers, right, under the Maryland Dream Act. Who then falls in that category? Who is a dreamer? Just specifically under the Maryland Dream Act. Let's concentrate on that, because like you said, that has always been covered, but the Maryland Dream Act, let's really focus in on that one.
Yes, okay, so to qualify for the Maryland Dream Act, an individual needs to have graduated from a Maryland high school or have a GED from the state of Maryland. They need to provide Maryland tax returns for the previous 3 years for either themselves or from a parent or legal guardian. There's an application that they need to fill out with us that's through the HCC website. And if they are male, they do have to apply for selective service also.
Wow, that's... That's surprising to me that they have to apply for selective service.
Yes.
Now, somebody might be listening and asking, well, is this a path to citizenship? Is this a path that people can take? And then after a few years of doing this, can I apply to become a citizen?
Mm-hmm. Not at this moment, no. But I know if you're following the news, there is hope. As you were talking about hope as we started, you know, I think that President Biden has hope that we may be able to see some movement in legislation that would provide a pathway to citizenship, especially for deferred action students. So I think we're all watching the news every day to see if we can, you know, take that a step further, and hopefully it comes to be.
So definitely keep up with the news, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have these conversations really with somebody like Lori. You know, if you're a student and you want to continue to further your career, I guess one message that I want to make sure that people learn today is that if you're in high school, if you have kids who are in high school who fall into either DACA or DREAM Act, right? They can continue their studies. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned that there might be students out there who don't fall into this because there's specific guidelines. Somebody who maybe mm-hmm. has arrived. I mean, we've seen that in so many countries in the world, there's been just devastating stories come in. And that many times pushes people to step out of their country and seek refuge somewhere else, right? So right. For somebody who maybe just arrived and want to further their education, they want to continue either for themselves or their kids studying, is HEC welcoming? Are there opportunities for them to come and continue their education at Howard Community College?
Yes, absolutely. We're open admissions, which means that everybody is admissible. There really is only one category of an individual who could not register for classes, and that would be somebody who is currently in the U.S., on a visitor stay or a tourist visa, because if you're here to be a tourist, you're not supposed to be a student. But except for that category, everyone is admissible, and we strive to be a welcoming environment. You know, me and my team love to work with these students. And once an individual gets past the admissions piece, nobody else knows what their status is. That's private and confidential. It's not shared with anyone. So, you know, we welcome students and hope that they will come to HCC to promote their education.
So what's that admissions process for somebody who maybe is undocumented? Or for somebody who has a certain status or falls into the DREAM Act, are there different processes for each one of the groups, or is it pretty standard for everybody?
It's pretty standard. All students would do the general online application for admission. And when the individual indicates that they're not a U.S. citizen, then they're prompted to upload whatever documents that they have. You know, so people that are in other visa categories would upload their visa, or a permanent residence would upload their green card. If a student doesn't have anything to upload, then they will get an email that will ask them to send a message to our international email box, which is intlstudent@howardcc.edu. And that prompts our enrollment manager to reach out to the student. You know, we're just looking for, that's when we're going to ask the student, hey, do you qualify for Maryland DREAM Act? Can we see if we can qualify you for this? If not, that's okay. Then it's just sort of that we're getting, we know that we can go ahead and move that student forward in the admissions process so they can enter HCC and then move on through all the rest of the process to registration.
I'm sure that can cause a lot of fear for some students, you know, being in that category of undocumented or DREAM Act, and then having a formal institution asking me about that, and you know, this is information that you don't want to be sharing, like you said, out there because of obvious reasons, right? There's a fear of, well, what if that information is then shared with another institution? Mm-hmm. What if that information goes to immigration? And then I find myself in big trouble just because I wanted to further my career. What's HEC's policies when it comes to that, to sharing students' information?
Yeah, all that student information is private and confidential. Even if a student submits, you know, tax documents for the Maryland Dream Act, those are nobody else in my office can see that outside of the international team. It's all kept private. We would not share it with instructors. We wouldn't share it with other offices. It's truly meant for us to use so that we can establish what the correct tuition should be for that individual. And then beyond that, that's all that it's used for.
So let's talk about tuition and let's talk what it means, you know, to be a DACA or Dream Act student or an undocumented student. What difference does that make when we're talking about tuition coming to college?
Yeah, that's a really good question because it can be quite complicated. So for deferred action, those students would be charged according to where they live. So if they're in Howard County, it's county tuition. If they're out of county, it's out of county tuition. If it's a Maryland Dream Act student, they could be charged either according to the location of their high school or the address that was on their most recent tax return. And it would be whichever one gives them the best benefit. So when we're looking at Maryland Dream Act documents, every time we're reviewing that, we're looking to see what's the best benefit for the student. Is it the address on the tax return or is it the location of the high school? If a student doesn't have any documents, then they would not be able to establish residency. And so in that case, they would be charged the out-of-state tuition. But we work closely with these students too, because sometimes people might consider themselves undocumented, but they might have an application in process with immigration or through USCIS. So it's always a conversation with students, you know, just, I don't know, like we're not trying to be nosy, but it could help us figure out, you know, can we help them with tuition if we know what's going on?
That's a place called limbo, you know.
Yes.
We're just here, but not here, and just waiting. And it's like you said, it's a really weird place to be in that limbo, because you have something pending that pretty much says that it's okay for you to stay here,
right?
Wait, but at the same time, is like not really.
Yes, exactly. And those periods of limbo can sometimes be years. So, you know, that's why we want to see whatever a student might have. We just want to look at it because maybe it is something that we could use to count them as a county resident. I mean, it just depends on how far along they are in that immigration process.
So it's important to have these conversations. I know they're difficult when you're sitting on that chair and you're being the one asked these questions. And I love that you said, you know, you might feel like they're just trying to find a little more information, dig a little bit deeper in there. But there's a reason for that, you know, because there might be some benefits. And mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, without getting too personal, but sharing a little bit of my personal experience, I was trying to find somebody, you know, years ago, and through a side conversation with an investigator, right? I shared just a little bit of information with this person. I had been looking on my own for this person for a very long time without any luck. And I shared just a little bit of information with the right person, All she had to do was go in her system, put the information, and she gave me the phone number that pretty much changed my life. Mm-hmm. So you just never know. You just never know. And the person that you might be speaking to about something totally different. I did not go into that investigator's office to talk about me. I went in there because I had been asked to come and testify in some trial that at a place that I was working. And the day of the trial, I went and they had moved the trial. Nobody informed me. So I went and talked to the investigator because I really did not want to be part of this. I had nothing to do with it. And as I sat down with this investigator and I told her a little bit about my story, she gave me the key. She gave me the key that morning that really changed my life. So that's why I'm sharing this, because, you know, you might be thinking, well, I'm only going to go talk to Lori about my education, right? Well, she might be able to, while speaking to you, she might be able to say, oh, you know what you just said made me think of this other office over here that might be able to help you, or, and that could just totally switch, you know, everything that you know so far and open doors that were closed. Like that was my case in that conversation. So, let's refocus. Let's go back to our conversation. And you know, Lori, when somebody comes to your office and says, I want to study, and you guys determine which category they fall into and which tuition rate you're going to charge them based on their immigration status, affordability, right? Because we know that's always something to consider for everybody who wants to further the education, regardless of immigration status. Affordability is always a thing to consider. Mm-hmm. What are the options? Because I know that maybe that's stopping somebody out there who says, well, I'm undocumented. I know that I'm not going to qualify for financial aid and they're not going to give me loans. Are there options? Are there plans out there? Are there things available for people to pay for their education?
Yes, there's definitely help available out there. I mean, the first thing I would suggest to any student is to apply for HCC's general scholarships. There are many scholarships available at HCC that are open to any student. So immigration status is not a factor. And we want students to apply through our website to the general scholarships. We do have specific scholarship called the Scholarship for Immigrant Education, which is specifically for students who are in deferred action, without status, or who have Maryland Dream Act. So, you know, we have been very lucky. There's quite a large fund available for students in these categories. I think over the last year, we were able to help over 40 students through this one particular scholarship fund. And a lot of the scholarships range from $500 to $1,500. The application for the next academic year, so for fall and spring, will open on April 1st. And our goal is always to award students before the classes begin in August. So students will know, you know, sometime over the summer, probably in early August, they will know what sort of additional funding they will be able to get, what scholarships they will have from HCC before their classes even begin. For the Scholarship for Immigrant Education, students need to enroll in at least 6 credits. And if they were a previous student, they have to have a 2.0 GPA. So definitely apply for that, because we want to give out money. That's kind of the fun part of my job. After that, for students that can qualify for the Maryland Dream Act, they could also be eligible for some state aid and grants. We call this MFSA for short, the Maryland State Financial Aid Application. So it is specifically for students who could not qualify for FAFSA. So you mentioned that FAFSA is the federal application for aid. And in order to qualify for federal aid, a person needs to be either a U.S. citizen or an eligible non-citizen. So students in these limbo categories or deferred action or somebody without status, they don't qualify there, but they might qualify under the Maryland state application. So we would encourage those students to also qualify for the Maryland DREAM Act, because that happens to be the criteria that Maryland state will use to determine the residency. There are other places where students can search for scholarships outside of HCC or through generic, you know, other scholarship searches. I guess the only thing we just try to advise students is to just be careful. If you ever see a scholarship where you have to pay to apply, you probably don't want to do that. That, you know, it's probably not as legitimate as it seems.
Absolutely. And that's a fair warning. And that's a really important warning, I would say, for everybody to keep in mind as you're looking for help. It always kind of like doesn't make sense to me to have to apply in order to get help. Now, there are some legitimate places out there. I don't want to discredit. Mm-hmm. But like Lori said, you do have to do your homework. You do have to do your research and make sure that you're applying for the right places. But it is relieving to know that there is money out there for you. Mm-hmm. Because I know when I was under student status, I basically disqualified myself, and I never didn't even, I remember I'm trying so hard to remember her name, and it's not coming to me. She would tell me, go and apply. And I was like, no, I'm not a citizen. She's like, I know you're not a citizen. That's why you're in my office, but there's money for you. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I never did it. I did not apply. You know, when I was under student visa, because I was afraid. Mm-hmm. I was just honestly afraid. I was like, well, what if that triggers something? And what if that then, you know, it was just all of these stories and ideas I was making up in my own head, really. Mm-hmm. Not that I had seen anything or heard anything like that. It was just me in my head with my fear of, well, if I put my information out there so much, then I'm probably going to end up getting in trouble. And, you know, looking back, I was able to afford my education. I made it work somehow, but it was a stress. It was a big stress. It was a big worry over my shoulders, that I probably didn't need to carry all by myself if I had just, gone and applied and followed the, advice that was given to me at the time. Lori, and maybe you agree with me, but because I know that, you know, public charge is a thing, and I know that many of the people who we're talking about today maybe have a process in immigration, and maybe that's where that fear comes in, right? Mm-hmm. What if I apply for this help over here, but then when I go in and find a way to apply for a permanent status, immigration status, then because I got them some money here for education, mm-hmm. it becomes a block in my way. What would you say to somebody who's having that kind of, you know, who's considering that and saying, well, should I really go that way? Because, mm-hmm. you know, or would it become a problem later on as I'm trying to really get my status settled here in this country?
Right. Well, I think anybody who's worried about that should definitely come talk to someone on my team. Generally speaking, you know, scholarships don't fall into public charge rules. And I would have to go back and look at recent, I think it was very recently that the public charge proclamation has been rescinded, but I would want to check that. But that's why I want somebody to come talk to us, because then we can do a little bit of research. And if we can't find the answer, then we can refer the student out to, you know, an immigration attorney who would be able to help them with that.
And that's the advice that I always give people, is like, whether you're coming to this country with any kind of immigration status, you know, if you're coming with a resident, with a green card, if you're coming with a new obtained citizenship, if you're coming in with a student visa, anytime, the moment you immigrate to this country, you gotta find a lawyer. You gotta find an immigration lawyer, somebody who is your friend and is walking with you, because like you just said, I mean, there's, you know, just so many changes that are happening all the time that could affect your status. And so it's important to have a person that you trust, a person that knows your case, because the moment this thing switch, they will be the first ones to call you and say, this just happened. Mm-hmm. And it either opened this up over here, or we need to change this over here, or whatever it is. So thank you for elevating that and for saying that, because I think it's really, really important for anyone who has immigrated to this country. I'll put myself out there again. You know, that was another thing that made me very nervous. You know, it's not easy to go and talk to somebody and say, this is my status. This is, I am not a U.S. born citizen, right? And so I fall into this other category over here, and we feel isolated, and we feel like we're the only ones in that situation, right? And then to go in and speak so openly with a stranger at the beginning, is a stranger, right? It's not easy. So I empathize, I sympathize. I have been there. It's not easy to do, but like I said earlier, it can open. When you talk to the right person, it's definitely not something to talk with anybody, right? But when you talk with the right person, when you go and talk to somebody at the Office of International and Immigrant Students here at Howard Community College, they are prepared to talk to you. They want to talk to you. They have, you know, the resources that you're looking for, the information that you're looking for, and they can guide you. So, or if you go and talk to a lawyer, that's another person, an immigration, good immigration lawyer. It's another person that you can develop a relationship with, and they can guide you. They can help you. And there's a lot of centers out there. I know that there is Fern right here in Colombia. There is Esperanza Center in Baltimore. Casa de Maryland is another one that's all over Maryland. And there's so many others. Those are just three that are coming to my mind where you can go and that's what they do. They look for ways to help immigrants. I do want to switch gears, but I also want to make sure that we're not forgetting anything. Is there anything about immigrants, DACA undocumented dreamers that maybe I have not asked yet that you're saying, please do ask me this question?
No, I think you've covered everything. I mean, I just want students to know they can reach out to us. And if they're a current student, they should be checking their HCC email, because that is where I put out a lot of announcements about scholarships, or, you know, when things are opening, or if we get news about, you know, some change in a law, it's going to come out through the HCC email.
For students who are in high school and, you know, there may be seniors this year, or they're still in 11th grade and they're in one of these categories, when is the right time for them to contact HCC? When should they start having these conversations and looking at their statuses and what's available and applying to continue their education in college?
Yeah, I think once they, you know, like now is a great time for students that are graduating in May to get in touch with us so that we can get you know, the paperwork in order. I mean, it's a lot of paperwork to gather documents and get them submitted. So sometimes it can take a couple of weeks for students, you know, to get all the pieces that we need submitted. So if they can do it sooner rather than later, it means that they're just going to know sooner rather than later that their tuition is set at a better rate for them. So March and April are great times for high school students to be reaching out to us so we can get them set up appropriately for the fall.
So reach out to HCC before your spring break, so then you know what you need to look for during spring break.
That's a good idea.
When you're doing your spring cleaning, you can be looking for those documents, and then after spring break, you can have it all and you can continue with your process and thinking about enrolling for HCC for the fall semester. It's incredible to think that we're talking fall when we're just starting spring.
Yes.
But if you want that help, if you want the money, and if you really don't want to have to rush through this, it really makes sense to start thinking of it right now. international students. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to dismiss them. I don't want to, you know, just not talk about them, because that is a process as well. And it's a different process. And I want you, Lori, to help us, you know, kind of like talk about how you guys assist them and what are the requirements on the process for mm-hmm. those international students.
Yeah, sure. So when we say international student now, we mean someone who's here in the U.S. on an F1 visa, which is a visa that's granted for full-time study. And these students have a very different set of application requirements. They have their own application on our website, an F1 application for admission. And they have to do lots of other things, like they have to show proof of English proficiency, which can be done through TOEFL or IELTS, or now that we're remote, actually we can do HCC placement testing even overseas. So that's kind of something we never did before the pandemic. So we do have a minimum English requirement for our degree program study, but if a student wasn't able to meet our English proficiency requirement, we can also bring students in to study in our English Institute first before they would move over to credit. And one of the big things for students who are international students coming to the U.S. on an F1 visa is they have to show that funding is available for one full academic year. And the funding has to cover out-of-state tuition rate for a full-time load, and it also needs to cover living expenses. These are just rules that go with the F1 visa, and admission to any college would require those same sets of criteria. So students can do our F1 application online, and then they are able to upload all the documents right through that application portal that they create. And then we will work with them to get them admitted. And, you know, again, now, like, we can work on registering students even from overseas when, you know, we weren't able to do that 3 or 4 years ago. So we have moved, the pandemic has moved us forward in many ways, but we will work with those students every step of the way. We had a number of students, because embassies were shut down over the summer or they opened too late for students to get visas. We did have a lot of students who chose to register in online classes from their home countries. And that was really interesting for us to see. You know, we had over 20 students in the fall who were all over the world taking all sorts of classes with HCC. And that was kind of neat to see.
That's beautiful. I can only imagine what that brings into the classroom itself, you know, to know that you're with somebody who is miles away.
Yeah.
Right. Even in a different schedule, like it mm-hmm. might be morning here, but for them, it might be evening already.
Right.
That's very, very cool. So when, you know, because I know that I personally, having grown up in Ecuador, I know that that was a dream for many of us to come to the U.S., but there were some barriers, right? Like trying to get the F1 visa. If you're taking the classes online, are some of those barriers lifted? And this is kind of like curiosity that's, you know, springing this question.
Yeah. So if a student decided to enroll from overseas, then they really don't need to meet the F1 admissions requirements. You know, they could, you know, if we discovered that in our communications with them, we might switch them over to the general application for admission, and they wouldn't have to submit any supporting documents because they're not trying to enter the U.S. in a particular category.
It's global education at its best, in my opinion. Like I'm glad that you're answering my question, because that was a question I had from the beginning of the pandemic. I was like, if this had happened when I was a student, maybe I would have not come to the country, because what I wanted was the education. I wanted that quality education. I didn't necessarily want to leave my country, right? My friends, my family, but I wanted that quality education. And if I can take it from home and I can take it online and still get my degree, You know, I think that's global education at its best. And I think that that is an opportunity that the pandemic created for all people in the world to really, you know, be able to enroll at HCC, take classes and other institutions, obviously, mm-hmm. Take classes, get that quality education. Is not the same. I will have to say that it's mm-hmm. not the same. There's certain classes that you probably still want to take in person and they're more beneficial that way. But the way that it expands, like I said, you know, I can't imagine that classroom and as a student sitting there and knowing that maybe there's somebody in Asia or somebody in Europe or in South America, and what that brings into the class, not just that the person's from there, but that the person's actually there at the same mm-hmm. time. I'd love to be a fly. I don't know if there's any flies in Zoom, but like I would love to be a fly and just watch that Zoom class and see, you know, what that brings and you know, the connections that are made mm-hmm. In that way. So, you know, it's been a year of the pandemic, lots of challenges, lots of lessons, lots of opportunities, lots of losses as well. You know, it's a balance, and we've seen it all. We've mm-hmm. seen it all. Pandemic, and I have to say, this is a beautiful thing that I love that the pandemic has brought to HCC and to students all over the world, that opportunity to just take some classes and continue to grow, mm-hmm. you know, and connection, because the one thing that we have all missed through the pandemic is that connection. But we're finding other ways in which we can connect, not just locally but globally. Mm-hmm. What message, Lori, do you have for all students, you know, for everybody listening and watching this conversation this morning?
I think the message that I would want to share is, you know, don't be afraid to reach out. No question is a dumb question. I think that we, the entire Office of Admissions and Advising, we can't help someone if we don't know what's going on. So I think it's important for students to just know that we are here, the whole office is here for students. And, you know, as I said before, if we can't address the question, then we probably know who can. So we're a good referral source for, you know, all sorts of services that are available on campus and even off campus. So, you know, the message is just reach out, anything, just, you know, please let us know what we can do to help and support you, the student, because we want you to be successful.
Let's remind everybody where they can get information, how they can get in touch with you. I know that, you know, as we continue to be online, sometimes it feels a little more difficult mm-hmm. to get in touch with somebody. So let's just remind everybody how they can get in touch with you, where they can find you, if they have any questions.
Sure. So I guess just in terms of email, I would use our general email for anybody that's international or immigrant. If they have questions, they should reach out to intlstudent@howardcc.edu. That's our generic mailbox. And then from there, the inquiry will get farmed out to whoever is best on our team that can answer that question. So if it's an advising question, it'll go to one of our advisors. If it's more of an immigration question, it might come to me. If it's admissions, then our admissions person will answer it. We'll figure out who's the best person to answer that question. And then beyond that, the howardcc.edu website, I mean, really, our search feature on our website is the greatest place to find information. If you put scholarships in that search bar, you'll get to our scholarship page. If you put F1 admissions, you'll get the F1 application. If you put the word immigrant in there, you'll go right to our page that has all the information about deferred action and Maryland Dream Act. So use the search bar on our website for sure.
It's my best friend. always refer to the search bar at howardcc.edu because it really is. I mean, and it's funny because you would think I know exactly how to search and where to go. And I'm like, well, if it wasn't for the search bar, I don't think I would find half the people or the resources that I look for in order to come up with shows or the directory. So, you know, Lori, you know, if you try to reach Lori directly, you can also search in our directory for her and you will get her email as well. So we're not hiding. There's many ways that you can get in touch with us. We are all in different locations geographically for now, but we are all very much still ready to serve you, so ready to help all of our students, you know, continue to further their education. Lori, we only have about 4 minutes left and we've covered a lot of information, but I just want to thank you again for what you do and just ask if there's anything else that you would like to add before we wrap our conversation up today.
Well, I wanted to thank you for the invitation. I wouldn't want to miss a chance to talk about me and my area and the students that I love working with so much. And I think it's important to get the word out that we're here to support students in any way that we can. So I thank you for, you know, giving me the chance to be here today to talk about all the categories of students that the international admissions area works with.
And I want to thank you because the work that you do really is inspiring, really brings hope. You know, that's what I started saying. It really brings hope. And you really, truly are creating a more amicable, a more welcoming, a more, I mean, you're inspiring. What you do is inspiring. You know, if we could take this type of mentality and just look at the person as a whole, as you said, you know, not just by how we know them, right? We know somebody because of work or we know somebody because of this one area usually, right? And we kind of like just center on that one area. Well, here you're challenging us to really look at the person as a whole and not just put a label on them. I think we would create a better world if we took that, if we took your the way that you run your office and we run our lives that way and we saw the person as a whole person and everything that they brought, not just the immigrant, not just the international student, not just the student, period.
Right.
I think we would create a much, much better world for everybody. So thank you. Thank you for bringing equity and for making HCC this open space, safe space for everybody. I really, really appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you everybody for listening and for watching. If you found information that's valuable to you and maybe to others, please share this with your friends, with your family. Leave us a comment, leave us a question, you know, reach out to me, reach out to Lori. We're here to help. If I don't know the answer, I might just put you in touch with Lori. And like Lori said, she will try to answer your questions, but if she doesn't have the answer, she probably knows who to send you to, who do you refer you to. So we just want you to succeed. We just want everybody to reach their dreams. And we just want, I think HCC's mission really is to create a better world. So, but don't quote me on that. Don't say that I say that. We just want to get you there from here. That's
right.
What we're focusing on right now, right? Have a wonderful day. And until next time, I am Cris Oviedo.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.